The big news out of the NFL this week was that not only the Buccaneers cornerback C.J. Wilson lost two fingers in a fireworks accident, but that all-pro defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul had one amputated for the same reason, which makes me need to tell you that I didn't take last week off for the reasons you probably thought I did. There was no episode of the show last week. You know, I was figuring because everyone had a holiday weekend, I feel like a good time to take a break, no one really noticed. However, I feel like I need to be honest now. I spent the last week trying to sew my fingers back on after a mild firework accident. I just want to be like NFL players, and honestly, at this point in my life, that's probably the only way I'm going to do it. And if this episode of this show doesn't blow your mind like I think it will, I hope it's at least a nice little firecracker to get your week rolling. This is Ruffin the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict, Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. On this explosive episode, we're going to talk about Justin Houston's contract situation and the merits of the most realistic offer that I've found so far. We'll discuss the future of Jamaal Charles, how much longer he'll be an elite back in the NFL. And also, we'll talk about D'Anthony Thomas and how he fits into these 2015 Chiefs. I found two interesting player comparisons from Andy Reid's past that I think will shine a lot of light on where he will show up next year. And then we'll look at one national projection for how the Chiefs fare. All right, I'm going to light the fuse. Everybody had better back up. It's going to blow. All right, let's talk now. And first, about the most important issue for the Chiefs right now, the biggest topic of conversation in Kansas City, with the most long-term ramifications, Justin Houston. He needs to sign a long-term deal by July 15th, which is Wednesday, or he will only be able to play out this season under the franchise tag for the Chiefs in 2015. Now, the franchise tag, we've talked about a bunch. We talked about Justin Houston a bunch the last several episodes. You want to hear more? Go back to the most recent episode. We talk about why Justin Houston is so good. But the franchise tag, 1 year, fully guaranteed, and Houston does not have to sign it, but if he wants to play in the NFL this year, it will be under the franchise tag, unless the Chiefs and Houston end up with a long-term deal by July 15th. Now, right here on Arrowhead Addict this week, we had two articles go up, one from Nick Floyd, one from Matt Verderam, taking pretty opposite positions on if the Chiefs should have a deal with Justin Houston happening right now. Nick Floyd's article was the benefits of not having Houston under contract. Here's what he wrote. As far for the Chiefs in Houston, if no contract is able to be locked up before the upcoming deadline, hopefully something can be done after the 2015 season. Both sides seem to want the same thing. Sometimes the numbers don't line up at the exact right time. So if the Chiefs are not able to get it done, that might not be a bad thing. Perhaps his numbers are down a little in 2015. Add parenthetically, they will be. Allowing the team a little more room for a contract in the offseason. But rest assured, the Chiefs need Houston. They will pay him for it either in 2015 or 2016. I admire Nick's faith, but I am afraid I disagree at least a little bit. I don't think this is as imminent as Nick makes it sound here. I also don't think that Houston needs the Chiefs. If Houston plays out, now the Chiefs could be tagging him again next year, paying him even more guaranteed money for just one season. But either way, whenever Houston is going to get to free agency, if he gets to free agency, he's going to make plenty of money from plenty of teams, have plenty of offers. He doesn't need the Chiefs. Now, this might be the best position he could be in. This is him staying where he's been his whole career so far, but he doesn't need the Chiefs like the Chiefs need him. If the Chiefs don't end up with Justin Houston, well, I'll talk about what that could look like in a little bit. Then Matt Verderam looked at the same issue from the other side, saying why it's so important the Chiefs get a deal done here, and it's something that I've talked about a little bit in the last couple of episodes, the repercussions of not having Houston signed. It extends far beyond just this season. Matt wrote, "The Kansas City Chiefs have until July 15th to sign outside linebacker Justin Houston to a long-term deal. Once that date passes, Houston can only play on his one-year franchise tag of $13.1 million until after the season. Then the sides are allowed to discuss a long-term deal again. There's been plenty of clamoring about why the Chiefs must get the Houston deal done, but somehow one of the most important aspects has been lost. Kansas City is facing an offseason in 2016 with a ton of defensive free agents hitting the market. If it wants to keep this elite group together, it might go a long way to show that the team is ready and willing to pay its best players. After this year, the Chiefs face the prospects of losing Eric Berry, Sean Smith, Tyvon Branch, Hussein Abdullah, Derek Johnson, Mike DeVito, Tom Bahali, and Justin Houston. And Dontari Poe's going to need a new deal pretty soon also, I add after the fact there. I think Matt makes a great point. We've talked about Houston's importance to this team and this defense, and again, I'll dive into that a little bit more in a second. But what Houston means to this team right now is also something to build around. If you look at this defense without Justin Houston next year, with all those free agents, and you think maybe, you know, half those guys will come back, the health of Eric Berry, the performance of Tyvon Branch, that'll really change the outlook of what the secondary looks like, as well as the performance of the rookie corners coming in will affect if Sean Smith needs to return. But Tom Bahali is either going to come back on a much reduced deal or he'll be gone. So maybe you end up bringing back Tomba for another year or two. But if you have Houston there and you say, okay, here's our defense. We have Dontari Poe. We need to sign him after this season for sure. We have Justin Houston locked up for 5 years or so, or 4 years at that point, saying after this season's complete. We've got these young corners. We've got Ron Parker. We've got the inside linebackers locked up. We're good to go here. And then, I mean, Derek Johnson at that point wouldn't be locked up. It would be saying the young linebackers still needing to get Derek Johnson done at that point. But at least there's some security, and we can say, look, we have at the very least, we have one of the two or three best pass rushers in football on our team for the next 5 years. Let's build around that. We don't have to worry about finding another all-pro outside linebacker because we've got the best in the league right here, right now already. To go in without that is just, this defense goes from one of the best in the league, in my opinion, to being really, could really be a detriment to this team, could be a weak point for this team. In 2016, 2017, we could be looking at this team without any of those guys I just talked about, or with just a couple of them still around, and go, wow, the Chiefs really need to rebuild this defense. If you have Justin Houston, that's out of the question. So both sides want to get a deal done. Why hasn't it gotten done yet? Here's the best potential contract that I've seen throughout this whole process. Joel Corey for CBSSports.com, a former sports agent, put together a potential contract that he thinks is a fair middle ground between the Chiefs and Justin Houston. Now, I firmly suggest that you go read this whole thing. It's a great piece with a lot of great points. I'm going to kind of take the chunk of it, of the middle of it, and gloss over it. But if you want to read the whole thing, I'll link to it here in the article on Arrowhead Addict. Otherwise, just go find it on CBSSports.com. So here's what Joel Corey put together. $20 million signing bonus with $7.5 million deferred until April 1st of 2016, which is common practice for the Chiefs. $48 million guaranteed. 28 of it guaranteed at the signing. The rest of it is prorated throughout the deal, which means he'll get a little chunk of the guaranteed money every year through 2018. Deal total, $81 million over 5 years, average of $16.25 million per year. So, again, the important numbers here, 5 years for $81 million with $48 million of that guaranteed. So even though part of the guaranteed money is prorated out and everything, You could say that the Chiefs could get out of the last end, the back end of that contract easier even than they got out of the Dwayne Bowe one, but I wouldn't expect it because you're signing Justin Houston under the idea that he's going to be around for this entire length of this deal. This isn't one of those contracts where you front load and you say, all right, here's some money right at the top, and then if it fades off towards the end, we can jump out of the contract and not hurt ourselves. With Houston, that's not what you're expecting here, but it looks like it would be with this setup. It would be fairly easy to eat some dead cap money if Houston took a huge dive and no longer became worth $16 million by 2018. So a five-year deal with Houston would take his age to 31 years. He would be 31 years old in this five-year deal. Tom Pahali right now is 31 years old. Houston's cap number with Corey's suggested plan would be $1 million this year and then around $20 million for the next 4 years. That gives the Chiefs about $8 million in cap relief for this season, which would allow them to do some things. If you really were thinking about Evan Mathis still, you could go do that. Or you could carry some cap money into the season in case something bad happens. If you want to take a shot at, I would still love for the Chiefs to go look at James Jones, even though he wouldn't take nearly that much money. But it gives the Chiefs some cap relief. In all likelihood, that's probably going to guys who get cut from better teams towards the end of training camp, which you've seen the Chiefs do in several occasions as long as John Dorsey has been here. But $81 million is a big number. $48 million guaranteed is a big number. But if I'm the Chiefs, I take that risk. You don't want to pay Justin Houston $20 million past being 31 years old. But as I talked about on the last episode of the show, you can go back and listen to at Arrowhead Addict /category/AA-radio, I believe, or just Google Arrowhead Addict Radio. You'll find the page. We talked about last week, Houston does so much so well that I think we'll see him decline whenever he's declining, similarly to how Tom Bahali has been declining, where he's a top 25 pass rusher, even in his golden years. Like Tomba, both of these guys have those great hand-fighting skills. Houston has the speed on the edge right now that Tomba has lost a half step of his speed. He's kept his strength. The technical ability for Tomba has continued to increase. I think that's a similar thing to what we'll see with Justin Houston's quote-unquote decline whenever that comes around. And he will be so worth this money for the next 3 years. And then if those last 2 years he declines to the point where he's, instead of being the second, fifth, 7th best pass rusher. He's the 12th, 15th, 20th best pass rusher in the league. I'm willing to sign up for that. I really am. And here's another reason why. Allowing Houston to play under the tag this year and then potentially letting him go into the free agency next year, or maybe tagging him and letting him go again. Let's just say after this season. If Houston plays after this season and then leaves the Chiefs, the next season, the Chiefs starting outside linebackers would probably either be Dee Ford and a rookie, Dee Ford and a constantly getting older Tamba Hali, Dee Ford and Josh Martin, or Dee Ford and some free agent who's not nearly as good as Justin Houston. I don't want to see that happen. And if we're talking Justin Houston and Dee Ford for the next 5 years, counting this season, or 4 years after Tamba leaves next season, if it played out that way, I can live with that. Dee Ford didn't do a whole lot well last year, but across from Justin Houston, I think he'll look just fine after he gets his feet under him in the NFL. And even if he doesn't, it's much easier to replace Dee Ford than it is to replace Justin Houston. I think the Chiefs need to get this deal done with Houston. I think they need to get it done before the 15th. And I think we'll look back at these numbers, and hopefully there'll be something around what Joel Corey put together, because this seems like a good middle ground that both sides should be able to come together on. All right, so now that I completely solved the Justin Houston problem, we can move on to another topic now. Let's talk about Jamaal Charles and his future. Jamari Traylor, the fake Jamari Traylor, T. Ewing 96, and Ty Declare 44 on Twitter all brought this up when I asked for things to talk about for this week. How much longer will Jamaal Charles be elite? Now, ESPN tackled this issue a few days ago, but this is how they opened the article, which I think is a hilarious misrepresentation of where Charles currently is. I quote, "Kansas City Chiefs running back Jamaal Charles will be 29 and is coming off a season when he went through one nagging injury after another. Are his best years behind him, or can Charles rebound to become the force he was earlier in his career?" Jamaal Charles has been a force for his entire career, with the exception of the year where he got hurt by stepping on the first down marker and missed the entire season with his torn ACL. He was not a force last year. However, he was fighting a nagging injury one after another last season, and that's very accurate. They had the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers beat writers, I believe, all write a little bit about what they thought about Charles going forward. But I just want to look now at what Jeff Legwold, the ESPN's Denver Broncos beat writer, what he wrote about it, because I think he made some really nice points here that we can stretch into some other another conversation. He pointed out that Justin Forsett, Frank Gore, and Matt Forte were the only running backs last season who of the age of 29 or older with 1,000 rushing yards last season. I think Matt Forte is probably the best comparison for Charles out of that, at least out of that group. He is the best comparison for Charles with his running style, use in the passing game, skill set, etc. So now we look at this. Matt Forte has had 7 seasons of 200 or more carries. Jamaal Charles has had only 5 seasons of 190 or more. That bodes very well, but you know, we can look at the whole bulk numbers. Again, Forte is 29, and Jamaal Charles is about to be 29. Forte has over 1,800 career carries, and Charles has over 1,200. 1,800 versus 1,200. Again, Charles has much less work on those legs. The times he was playing, early in his career, he was just playing as a third down back. Forte never really had that. Forte has been a workhorse for as long as he's been in the league. And Forte has continued to be very, very good, very productive, not just carrying the ball, but also in the passing game. So I think we're going to see, if I had to put numbers on it, I think we'll see 2 more seasons of Jamaal being a top 5, top 10 back, and then 2 more seasons of him being a very, do not get me wrong here, a very effective piece of a larger platoon, and still being one of the best pass-catching backs in the league. Now, when I say platoon, I don't mean as a third down back, and we assume he'll lose his speed a little bit. Once he loses that speed, he loses a lot of his potential as a third down back, although he'll be able to catch the ball, he'll be able to pass block as well as anybody. So I think we're going to have two more years of him being the number one top 5 running back that we've known him to be these last few years, and then we'll have a couple more years of him being a very useful piece. Interestingly, though, his contract runs out after 2 seasons. So the Chiefs are in a pretty safe place with his deal right now, but if things play out like I think they will, I'd like to see Charles get kind of a reasonable two-year deal to keep him in Kansas City through 2019 to finish his career without ever leaving the red and gold. But the NFL is a brutal place for running backs, and as Charles advances, like the question of, is he past his prime? Yeah, probably so. His prime was probably 2 seasons ago, I suppose, but he still has, if you expect sort of a bell-shaped curve to come from NFL running backs, which might not be accurate because the drop-off can in some cases be so severe, I think Charles is going to be in that top, absolutely in that top tier of NFL running backs for the next 2 seasons. So quote-unquote past his prime is not nearly as dire of a situation as you might expect when you hear that phrase. So you can calm down on that. I think he'll be very good for quite a while still. 2 years in the NFL is a lifetime. Another often used comparison for Jamaal Charles that I ended up looking into is Chris Johnson. We've all heard that whenever Johnson was one of the top backs in the league and Charles was sort of starting to rise, there's a lot of comparisons of Jamaal Charles being, you know, a young Chris Johnson. So I looked at Chris Johnson's stats. Johnson fell off around the 1,700 carry mark. Again, Charles has a little over 1,200. I see no reason to believe that Charles will drop off for at least two more years as the number one guy on this offense. He's not going to get 300 carries. That's never going to happen. He'll get, you know, he's had five seasons, like I said earlier, of 190 or more carries. Maybe he gets 200 carries this year, 210, 220, and a bunch of hopefully a bunch of touches in the passing game. But in that general stat realm, that plays out quite well for Charles having two more years as the top man and then some more time in a sort of a platoon system. Don't worry about Jamaal Charles. He's going to be around and very good for at least the next couple of seasons. Another Twitter question, and this one I love, from T. Ewing 96. How will the Chiefs use DeAnthony Thomas? Now, this is a question that I've talked about DeAnthony Thomas here and there quite a bit. We know the Chiefs have had these receiver questions. I expect to see him involved, in some level with the Chiefs, but I haven't really dug into his role specifically. This question made me do that, and I'm really interested by what I've sort of put together here. Back on draft day in 2014, I went back and watched the NFL Network draft coverage from the Chiefs who took DeAnthony Thomas in the fourth round. And Mike Mayock said the Chiefs would have to manufacture touches in order to use Thomas to his potential. Andy Reid did that in places last year, and this year I think he's going to do it a whole lot more. But I also think that he's going to get some natural work in the slot. He's currently working out strictly as wide receiver in a kick returner, obviously, but he's not in the running back room half the time and receiver room half the time. He's training as a receiver. So if he could continue to work on his hands and his route running, his speed is there. He's absolutely explosive. Look at screens, his ability to flat on the sideline, quick cuts across the middle when he can break up field. I think his speed makes him a very, very versatile weapon. However, we don't know what Andy Reid is thinking. So I went and found two similar physical specimens from Andy Reid's past to try to project how we're going to see DeAnthony Thomas be used in the future. So first, let's start with DeAnthony Thomas. All of this stuff's coming from ProFootballReference.com. DeAnthony Thomas, he's listed at 5'9", 175. Last year, he played in 12 games, started at 3. He had 30 targets, 23 receptions, 156 yards, and then he rushed for 113 yards and only 14 attempts. It felt like he was used more than that because of his ability to really blow stuff up on special teams, but he was really not used that much in the offense last season, and I think we're going to see that change this year. Look at 5'9", 175 is DeAnthony Thomas. Now, contestant, blind player number two here, or blind player number one, 5'9", 165. In his first year with Andy Reid, but his fourth year in the league, first year with Andy Reid, this guy played in 15 games, started just 6, had a lot of comparisons to DeAnthony Thomas, 83 targets, 53 receptions, 500 yards receiving, and he rushed for much less than that. He only rushed 8 times that whole season for only 5 yards, even though previously, 2 years previously, he rushed the ball 114 times. But again, here we're talking about his first season with Andy Reid that year. 15 games, 6 starts, similar physical profile to DeAnthony Thomas, 53 catches, 500 yards receiving. That is Dexter McCluster. Now, I think the issue of it was his first system under Andy Reid is something that is a huge point here, because that first year to second year jump in Andy Reid's system has historically been a pretty big deal. So I think those numbers of Dexter McClusters are something that we could expect to be outdone by DeAnthony Thomas this season. Now let's go to a different player, 5'10", an inch taller than DeAnthony Thomas, than DeAnthony Thomas, and just a couple of pounds heavier than DeAnthony Thomas. All of these players start their names with a D and an E. We have DeAnthony Thomas, Dexter McCluster, and this new player, his second year with Andy Reid, his second year in the Andy Reid system. Again, similar physical profile, but his playing style is something we would all agree after I say his name, is seen differently than DeAnthony Thomas's is. Second year with Andy Reid, 15 games, 15 starts, 117 targets, 62 receptions for over 1,000 yards, averaged almost 20 yards per reception, 9 touchdowns, longest reception was 71 yards. That's the profile of a guy who is stretching the field. 20 yards per reception is not what we typically are going to expect from a slot receiver, but a lot of those, similar frame, a lot of the same physical tools, that speed, if DeAnthony Thomas's hands can up to this level, we might see a season like the second year of, drumroll, DeSean Jackson. I always thought of DeSean Jackson as a much bigger, more physical player than 5'10", 178. I think it's fascinating that he's in a very similar place as DeAnthony Thomas is from the physical perspective. Again, if Thomas gets to the point of technical receiver abilities, he has the physical tools to beat DeSean Jackson. And that's a fascinating and really exciting prospect. Now, I think we'll see him split somewhere between the Dexter McCluster and DeSean Jackson roles. If he matched McCluster's season with 50 receptions for 500 yards receiving, plus some real big special teams plays, and getting used in more critical situations than it feels like Dexter McCluster got used in, and again, outperforming that because it's the second year in Andy Reid's system, I think we'd all be very happy. If we see him catch 60 passes, or probably less, higher yards per reception ratio, 50 catches for 650 yards, I think everybody would be pretty happy with that year for DeAnthony Thomas, and I think that's something that's fair to hope for. Over on RotoWorld.com, Evan Silva wrote a piece on his expectations for the Chiefs. It's mostly about fantasy football, but his summary is very interesting. Here's what he writes about what he expects from the Chiefs next season. The Chiefs' Vegas win total is 8.5, a conservative projection for a team that's gone 11-5 and 9-7 in two seasons under Andy Reid and will try out its best pass-catching corps under Andy Reid's tenure while returning several key components from last year's injury-ravaged defense. Jamaal Charles is a truly Canton-caliber player, while Nile Davis is a more than capable insurance for a run-first team. The secondary looks strong on paper, with or without Eric Berry. The offensive line is concerning, but GM John Dorsey was aggressive about revamping it this offseason. On paper, the Chiefs' schedule sets up for a slow start followed by a fast finish. Ultimately, I'd take the over on 8.5, guessing Kansas City ends up at 9 or 10 victories. I think this is a very fair summary of what the Chiefs can expect for next season, and I haven't talked a whole lot about predicting next year except right after the schedule came out. I don't even think I've put together an expectation since the draft ended. The slow start, fast finish is not only possible, I think it's very likely for the Chiefs to end up with, and if they have a fast finish going into the playoffs, that slow start isn't going to hurt nearly as badly as it did after the first couple of weeks. Now, the schedule does look pretty difficult on paper. However, the team also looks pretty good on paper. Most of this is all going to have to play out on the field. We all get that. We understand how football works. But I think this is a good summary of a potential, actual, feasible way for the Chiefs to play out. And this also isn't from a Chiefs fan or Chiefs writer. It's a national writer, mostly talking fantasy football, but then also trying to summarize what he thinks about this whole Chiefs season. 9, 10, 11 victories. I think taking the over on 8.5 is very fair. Andy Reid hasn't had less than 9 wins since he's been here. And as he mentioned, the team actually has an offense now. It actually has receivers. Nile Davis is, I'm not nearly as high on Nile Davis as apparently lots of fantasy experts are. But Charles, Macklin, DeAnthony Thomas, Albert Wilson, Travis Kelce, my goodness. Those are real weapons. All those names are real weapons. Now, Albert Wilson and DeAnthony Thomas, those are guys we're hoping break out. But Charles, Kelce, and Jeremy Macklin are all established borderline superstars, if not actual superstars. They could all be top 5 players of their position. In fact, I think Jeremy Macklin has the hardest time to get the top 5 at his position because there's so many super talented receivers in better situations. But overall, this is the most talented Chiefs team Andy Reid's had. It's the team that he and John Dorsey have had the most control over building. And in the past, when Andy Reid and John Dorsey on their own have built a team, those teams have had more than 8.5 wins. Yeah, the schedule looks a little bit tough, especially right at the beginning, but if a slow start's followed up by a quick finish and takes the team right into the playoffs, you will not hear me complaining come December and January. And fingers crossed for February, but we'll talk if we get there. All right, last thing on this show, let's talk about some small Chiefs news and then some stuff from outside of Kansas City. Let's start at ProFootballFocus.com. They put together an article Mike Clay wrote, Why Not All Targets Are Caught? It talks about throws that are on target and why they are or aren't caught based on the headline. Interesting thing here that's very Chiefs-related is that Travis Kelce had the highest percentage of on-target throws in all of football. 89% of his targets were on target, were good throws. And Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith was on target for 74% of his passing attempts in 2014. That's second. That is second in football behind Drew Brees. Those are both very good stats for the Chiefs, and very good. If you're looking at it from a fantasy perspective, I think that's a very good sign for Travis Kelce going forward. If you're looking at it from a Chiefs fan's perspective, that's a good sign not only for Travis Kelce, but for this entire offense. Now, we want to see Jeremy Maclin, and as I talked about the DeSean Jackson similarities with DeAnthony Thomas, we want to see this happen with DeAnthony Thomas, where downfield targets become a bigger part of this offensive game. And we saw it to Donnie Avery a few times, but Donnie Avery lost his hands, so he never converted any of them. If Alex Smith can stay on target a little bit deeper down the field, the is Alex Smith good enough debate will fall apart by week 8 of this season. Now, if he just has that real efficiency within 10 yards or so, we'll still have that debate about the deep ball, but Travis Kelce will be performing so loudly that we're not going to be able to hear it. And if guys like Kelce, DeAnthony Thomas, Albert Wilson, and Jeremy Maclin are getting the ball 8 yards down the field and then are having a play set up to where they can take that and turn up the field, we're not going to have that big of an issue anymore with the down-the-field game. Alex Smith needs to continue to be on target with whatever throw he's asked to make. He's surrounded by playmakers now. I didn't even mention Jamaal Charles' name. The reason why surrounding Alex Smith with talent and weapons is so important is because he can do this. He can do very, very accurate, second best in football in small chunks. And he might be able to do it deeper down the field with better down-the-field receivers for the first time in his career. But he can definitely do it within that 10-yard range. So if he's hitting Kelce, Wilson, Thomas, Maclin, Charles, guys with speed and physicality, they can stretch those 6, 7, 8, 10-yard passes into 30-yard gains, because that's what they do. This offense can win in the NFL. And Travis Kelce is going to be a monster at it, and hopefully the rest of the offense will follow in a lockstep. The supplemental draft happened this week, and the Chiefs didn't take anybody. In fact, I believe the Rams took the only player in the entire draft. It was an offensive lineman, but the Chiefs did make a move immediately following it. The Chiefs signed former KU defensive back Kevin Short, who was eligible for the supplemental draft, was not picked, and the Chiefs signed him. It's a long shot. He missed rookie minicamps and everything that would have been a really great chance for him to show what he has. But he'll probably be around still whenever training camp starts. And at that point, the Chiefs are turning over every rock to bring in defensive back talent. Glad to see him continue to do it. Now let's get out of Kansas City a little bit. Look at some national stuff. This first story especially is very, very relevant. Chargers tight end Antonio Gates suspended for the first 4 games of the NFL season. I think it was a performance-enhancing drug situation. It's 4 games for Antonio Gates. That number's not going to move as far as we know, although the NFL has been doing a lot of that lately. The Chiefs don't play the Chargers until week 11 and week 14, so Antonio Gates will certainly be back by then. And even though he's a future Hall of Famer, I think Gates at this point is a little bit overrated by his name outplaying his actual play on the field. The Chargers have other weapons, but Gates is certainly a big part of it. We already talked about the Chiefs having a slow start to the season, or at least being able to expect that because of how the schedule looks. But this could really help the Chargers also have a slow start to the season. Those first 4 games without Antonio Gates are going to become more of a challenge. They start off the year with the Lions at home and then at the Bengals. Now then at the Vikings and the Browns at home, those 2 games they'll be favored with or without Gates. But if they start off the season 0-2 without one of their main weapons on offense, that's definitely a benefit for the Chiefs. Now, it'd be better if it was specifically for a game against Kansas City. And I think Gates is on his way down. He's an aging player. He's on his way to Canton, but also on his way out of the league very slowly. But losing Gates for 4 games, it is going to be a chunk out of the Chargers' start. That's a good thing for the Chiefs. That's pretty straightforward. A source says, this is via Ed Werder, source says Jason Pierre-Paul will not sign his franchise tender until he's confident he can pass a physical to prevent the Giants from putting him on the non-football injury list and will have full control. This is a super interesting story. I mentioned it at the beginning of the show. I'm sure you've heard about it if you followed the NFL at all. Jason Pierre-Paul had to have a finger amputated after a 4th of July fireworks accident. He's in a similar situation as Justin Houston. He wanted a long-term deal, had not signed his franchise tag yet, and then he blew off a finger. There are a few ties you can make to Houston. I think that's basically it at this point. I mean, you can say, you know, freak things happen, so Houston should get a deal locked up as soon as possible. At this point, the Jason Pierre-Paul thing is just going to be very interesting to watch in general to see where it goes. And it seems very unlikely that they're going to have a long-term deal while he's still missing a finger and they don't know what to do about it. So he'll probably, I would assume, play under the franchise tag after signing much closer to actual game time. something to keep an eye on. And the NFL reduced Greg Hardy's suspension to 4 games. Drew Rosenhaus said he will confer with Hardy, the NFLPA. They're potentially going to appeal to get it even lower. Hardy missed a whole bunch of last season because of his domestic abuse case. So in total, I think he would be suspended for about 19 total games if this 4-game one holds up at 4. I've talked about Greg Hardy in the past. The NFL suspension system is absolutely off the rails. It looks like Tom Brady's his verdict is supposed to come out soon. I'm recording the show on Sunday afternoon. We haven't heard anything about that yet. The future of NFL suspensions is just all over the place. I don't know why we haven't heard about Sean Smith and if he's actually going to miss 2 games or not. At this point, I'm just rolling my eyes at the NFL and what they do with suspensions because it's absolutely all over the place. That's a wrap for this episode of Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio, arrowheadaddict.com. I'm Joshua Briscoe. As I said in the last couple of episodes, if you have people who are looking for places to talk Chiefs and places to listen to Chiefs talk and Chiefs talk only during this offseason and then rolling into the regular season whenever we actually get to talk about real games, tell people about this show. Let's spread the word on a little bit. The more people listening, the larger the base of the conversation is, the bigger the show will be, the bigger our conversation topics will be. More people, more topics, good stuff if people all tune into the show. You can always tweet me at JB Briscoe on Twitter. Give me your questions, your topics, your subjects, anything you want to hear talked about on this show. I'm always happy to listen. If you want to have a conversation, let's do that. We'll bring that to the show as well and try to figure out exactly where we need to land on a certain issue or just have a good debate. As always, thanks for listening to the show. Roughing the Kicker, arrowheadaddict.com, Joshua Briscoe. This was a fun one. I enjoyed this show. Blew up like a firework.
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?